time for the weekly edition of the Africa Report with Sister Khadija Patel, who joins us on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa
barakatuh. Ramadan Mubarak to yourself and your family.
Thank you, Mulana, and to you and all the listeners as well.
Jazakumullah khair for your time. As usual, we appreciate your time on Radio Islam. Now, first and foremost, this morning we move all the way to the north to Nigeria. Nigeria's militant group Boko Haram has retaken the town of Boso in southeastern Niger following the intense fighting with troops from Niger and Nigeria. Does this signal a resurgence of Boko Haram?
Mulan, I think if anything, it shows us that while President Buhari came to power 1 year ago, vowing to stamp out Boko Haram within 12 months, he's been unsuccessful. While we've seen Boko Haram being much more quiet and subdued, rather, in within Nigeria itself, we're now seeing that it's becoming more emboldened in neighboring countries like Niger. We saw that Niger itself lost a number of troops over the weekend in fights with Boko Haram. Something like more than 30 soldiers from Niger were actually killed in clashes with Boko Haram forces. And questions are now being asked of the strategies being used against Boko Haram. Have they really been effective? Especially considering, like I said, that President Buhari said that Boko Haram would be stamped out within 12 months. 12 months have just passed of his presidency, and there's been a lot of reflection both within Nigeria and outside about what has been done correctly and what not in his approach to stamping out Boko Haram. We know that he has employed the might of the Nigerian military against Boko Haram in northeastern Nigeria, but that in itself has not been enough. We know that this is an area that is deeply impoverished. It's been suffering sort of the neglect of the great Nigerian government for years and years and years, really since independence. And so there are significant challenges to governance and law and order in these areas, even without Boko Haram. These are areas in which Boko Haram is allowed to thrive because there is no semblance of governance there in the first place. So a strategy to deal with Boko Haram cannot be only a military strategy. We've got to think more broadly. We have to think in terms of development, in terms of governance, in terms of everyday safety and security for the local populations there. These are some of the considerations that I think have to inform future policy and future approaches to Boko Haram. It's a reign of terror within the northeast of Nigeria, but also within the greater region. As as Mulana mentioned, this is a neighboring country. This is Niger. It's not even Nigeria itself. This is Boko Haram, emboldened enough to take a whole town in a neighboring country. We know that there's a regional, sort of a regional military force that has been assembled to fight Boko Haram. These forces are made up of personnel from the Nigerian military, from Niger, from Cameroon, from Chad. So these are sort of the West African nations that have clubbed together, understanding the danger that Boko Haram poses to peace and security in the area. But and what we're seeing once more is that even though, for example, the U.S. and the U.K. have sent something like 300 of their own military advisors, as they call it, to this regional force. Again, how has that translated into any success? A more comprehensive and a more coherent strategy against Boko Haram has to be applied, and it has to, any strategy and any approach to Boko Haram has to also, I think, acknowledge the lack of development and the Nigerian government's own culpability for human rights abuses in the area, and that has to, I think, be the starting point here to address the reign of terror, like I called it, of Boko Haram in this in this region. And but beyond that, when we think about as we begin fasting today, think about the fact that more than 2 million people within this area have been rendered homeless by Boko Haram. There's 2 million people who are either displaced internally in Nigeria or outside of the country. It's 2 million people who have been rendered homeless, like I said, by Boko Haram. And I think that shows us the severity of the problem here, that we know the thousands of people have been killed. Estimates say about 20,000 people have been killed. But I think that the sort of the enduring legacy of Boko Haram, if we can try to understand what the kind of effect they've had, we can think about the 2 million people who are homeless because of them.
Yes, unbelievable how long they've continued to minister the region and continue to spread their tentacles over the region. Now, moving off over to East Africa, a five-year-old child was hit by a police bullet in Kenya yesterday as police struggled to disperse protesters in various parts of the country. What exactly is happening over there?
Well, this protests have been called by the Coalition for Reforms and Democracy, which is known as CORD in Kenya. And they organized a day of rage in Kenya yesterday. It's being led by the former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. And they've accused Kenya's electoral body, the IEBC, of bias towards the President Uhuru Kenyatta. Now, remember that Uhuru Kenyatta beat Odinga in a result in the last election, but that election was disputed by the likes of Odinga. So what we're seeing is protesters organized by CORD have taken to the streets of Kenya. They are demanding electoral reform. They are demanding that the electoral body face immediate and urgent reform before the next election. The next election is scheduled for about a year and a half's time, and people have taken to the streets demanding that government institute measures immediately to reform this electoral body. They point out that the electronic voting system in the last election failed, and they blame this for the current president Kenyatta coming into power. They believe that they allege some kind of corruption here. So we saw particularly great large protests in the town of Kisumu, which is described as an opposition stronghold. It's in western Kenya, and police opened fire. They also used tear gas and water cannons to disperse protesters. The BBC is reporting that the Kenyan police actually dispute the fact that they were dispersing protesters. They say that protesters turned violent and looted shops, and that they were dispersing looters and not protesters. So there is sort of that contradiction there. But I think more broadly, Molana, if we think about what is happening in Kenya, and we see the kind of urgency and the numbers of people that are coming out into the streets, we can understand that there is a great level of discontent within the country. By and large, the protests yesterday, particularly those in the capital, were peaceful. But over the last month, at least 3 people died in similar protests, also in western Kenya, also when anti-riot police opened fire. So there certainly is a tendency for the Kenyan police to deal with protesters by opening live fire on them. It's something that we in South Africa struggle with as well, especially after Marikana, and we understand the problems related to that, especially when we also have a very high high rate of protests within the country here. The policing of public protest is something that I think that both South Africa and Kenya are currently struggling with. And we understand that you know, the Kenyan government is saying in response to these protests, yes, we understand that that the electoral body needs to be reformed, and we're ready to listen to the public. You know, we're ready to take public submissions on how exactly it should be reformed, but protests are not going to solve anything. So there is that contradiction as well. If we don't understand protests itself as a form of you know, of outpouring of public sentiment, then you know, that's where I think it has to begin, to, by rethinking that.
Yes, absolutely. Those are pertinent questions that you ask at the end. We appreciate your time this morning, Sister Khadija. Jazakumullah khair for the very informative report.
Shukran, Malana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.